It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. We have a lot to talk about because we are just getting into the kind of sample sizes that can be enormously dangerous for fantasy players and baseball analysts. So let's turn into the skit. We start with some significant injuries, and there are quite a few of them, and particularly at the catcher position. Buster Posey and Gary Sanchez to the DL. Gary Sanchez out a good while. If you are looking at catchers, where do you go? It's not a really appealing set of options unless you're really in like a 10-team, one-catcher league. Who should people be looking out for if they are doing without a catcher right now?
You're right. It's not an appealing set of options. I mean, if someone like Stephen Vogt is available in your league, then that's, you know, an easy add. He plays regularly and, you know, and he's okay. But if you need to go deeper than that, you know, there's Giovanni Soto actually was about to be one of my favorite recommendations for today because he typically plays well when he's healthy, but he's not healthy for long.
Yep.
So he's a good DL fix when you have a player hurt, but now he's already injured and heading to the DL himself. Jason Castro, I think, is okay to consider. There's a lot of volume there. He should play often. He's been hitting okay. Cameron Rupp, same thing, should play a lot. Francisco Cervelli should play a lot, and his batting average is usually respectable. Travis d'Arnaud, I don't really feel comfortable with because he's not hitting well right now. I think long-term maybe he'll come around, but there's not a lot to do other than just, you know, pick out the best one. I think one thing owners can do is look, especially in daily transaction leagues, is look at the matchups each day and just kind of cycle through those catchers and pick ones who are facing mediocre starters.
Two things. One, I like, I mean, I've always liked d'Arnaud. I think we've talked about him fairly extensively on here. He's a player that I like and want to believe in. And so, you know, the numbers in some ways aren't great right now, but excuse me, he does have 3 extra base hits in 21 at-bats. I like that. You know, he's drawn some walks. I mean, look, these sample sizes are tiny, but I can look at d'Arnaud's numbers and be encouraged and see him as a guy worth taking a flyer on. But I think the other thing you note is playing daily. You know, I have Gary Sanchez in our office league and have Castillo as my backup, so that's not a bad situation to be in. I just plugged him in. But, you know, the other thing that I looked at, I picked up Wolters for the end of their homestand. And that's a guy I think is worth thinking about when they're at home. You know, it's things like that. I think you make a fine point that it may really come down to, if not day-to-day, at least series-to-series. If you've got a guy who kind of intrigues you going to Denver or going to Phoenix, and maybe the other placeholder you've had is now going to St. Petersburg, you know, maybe you make the flip and just kind of make do on a day-to-day if you have that option.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something to do in the daily leagues or in one-catcher leagues. In two-catcher leagues, I've been asked some questions on Twitter about, you know, would you trade someone like Gary Sanchez right now for someone like Wilson Contreras, who was definitely down a tier from Sanchez when we were doing preseason rankings, but just for the fact that, you know, would you rather have Travis d'Arnaud, say, for the next month and then Gary Sanchez the rest of the way or just Wilson Contreras the rest of the way? I'm mostly inclined to stay stubborn and stay with Sanchez and someone that I put a lot in the draft, but I can definitely see the angle on the trade and how the value's pretty fair in a two-catcher league right now.
Yeah, and look, I Contreras is somebody I like a lot, so that's the kind of thing that would tempt me. We talk more injuries and boy, we continue to talk about my draft here unintentionally. Trey Turner to the DL and Segura as well. You know, some other, you know, not quite as high picks as Turner, but Matt Kemp, Jackie Bradley. And to kind of tie into the philosophical question you were just asking, where do you want to be on the trade talks for these guys? Do you want to swoop in and get you some value? And I think with somebody like Kemp, that might be an intriguing option. Do you want, or any of these guys, you want to sell now? I mean, to me, you know, the one guy I'd be most inclined to go try and get is Turner, but the problem is I really don't think Turner's going to be out long. I think Turner's absence is very brief, and when he comes back, you know, I just don't think you're going to get much value on him. I think if you can get value, I'd do that in a heartbeat. So I think they are going to be fairly careful. I don't think he's going to be in a position to push that and risk re-injuring. But are there any of those guys that you see sort of inefficiencies in the market in either direction, either as a potential trade acquisition or as somebody you might be wise to move now?
Yeah, I think that there's going to take – some time for fantasy owners to get their head around the 10-day DL.
Yep.
And
yep.
owners typically have, we still have that mindset, and so do I, of the 15-day DL. And when you lose a player, you think, oh, so this is at least 2 weeks. And, you know, it could be more than that. And it could be 2 weeks or more for any of these players. But with the 10-day DL, I mean, you lose, say, Matt Kemp went on the DL at the beginning of this week. He could be back basically by the middle of next week. And, you know, in a weekly transaction league, he may really not even leave your lineup or just leave your lineup for 1 week. So one way I think you could get value, in a shallow league, I would be looking to trade for the injured player because it might not be a long stash and there are plenty of options on waivers to cover him while he's gone. In a deeper league, a 15-team league, something like that, now I'd be interested sometimes maybe at looking to trade the player if the drop-off was just, say, around. Like, for example, the Trey Turner owner. Everyone wanted Trey Turner over Francisco Lindor 2 weeks ago.
Right.
But right now, Lindor is on fire. He's healthy. He's been really durable in his career so far. Turner's a speedster, you know, nursing a lower body injury. I think that would be a real trade talk.
I would be highly intrigued to be a participant in trade talks like that.
Yeah.
Staying in the infield, Chris Owings off to a hot start. I'm not sure what to make of him. I guess I'm not entirely buying, but I'm also kind of aware that I may be unfairly negative on him. He may be a guy that I'm just sort of unfairly knocking. To me, he's kind of just a guy, and the thing I look at is and I know these aren't the. I know the second category is not something we do in fantasy, but I do a quick look and I see a .324 batting average and an .818 OPS, and I say, you know, that indicates to me a guy that when the batting average drops, the value drops. He's stolen some bases and he stole 20 bases last year, and that certainly got some value. But even the last 2 years, 266 games, 1,000 plate appearances, 111 runs. So, you know, he doesn't get you one of the other things that speed guys sometimes do. Am I too down on Owings? Is he a guy that people should like more than I like?
I'm going to say that I'm a little more positive on him. He is someone who I had kind of given up on. When he first came up, I was expecting something a little bit similar to what we're seeing right now. He had always been a high average hitter in the minors. He really excelled. I think it was 2014 he really excelled in the minors and then got some time with the Diamondbacks. And, you know, I was expecting him to come into the majors and be a high average hitter who could steal some bases. And then he really wasn't because, as you said, beyond hitting for average, he doesn't really do much. So when the average wasn't there, then he wasn't really doing much. But last season we saw some progress. Like, he hit .277, he stole 21 bases. So if this year he could be even a little better than that and, say, a .290 hitter who steals 26 or 7 bases, I mean, with there not being a lot of base stealers out there and he's multi-position eligible, I think he's an interesting guy now to be at the end of your shallow league 12-team roster because you can get him in and out of your lineup at different spots and get those cheap steals from him. But I'm not expecting power, and I'm not expecting 35 steals or even a .310 average or something like that.
Though, again, you know, if we start talking about, you know, daily transaction leagues or even when you have weekly, you know, guys, that's another one of those places where you can play the home-road thing, and particularly in the NL West, I think that home-road thing can be such a tool where you've got two parks that are really, really good to hit in and three that are not so good. I mean, Dodger Stadium's reputation is probably a little disconnected from how it actually plays, but you know that's a division where you can really play that home road thing for hitters in Colorado and Arizona and pitchers in LA, San Diego, and San Francisco. So you know if we're talking about those kind of marginal values, and it's something to at least have in mind.
Yeah, and I was going to mention going back to the DL conversation with a player like Owings, the way the DL's changed a bit, a player like Owings who will be eligible at three positions. You know, if you're the Gene Segura owner, you can replace him with Chris Owings. If you're the Matt Kemp owner, you can replace him with Chris Owings. Players like Owings may become very valuable and be in your roster almost all the time if teams are going to make a little bit more liberal use of that DL spot, you know, in real baseball this year.
No, it's definitely a good point. And it's funny because, you know, we spent a lot of, I think, the last year or so not really that interested in positional flexibility, but I think we're beginning to see that maybe it's coming back into being a relevant thing again.
Yeah, I mean, one Owings could save you roster spots. It'll allow you to invest in, you know, potential closers or interesting starting pitchers because instead of needing a backup outfielder and a backup middle infielder on your bench, you know, he covers all that in one.
Yep. Nomar Mazara, off to a very nice start and hitting for power, which it tends to be one of the things that I am kind of less skeptical of. I see a guy who's hitting for power, and I'm more willing to buy. And you know, it might almost be too soon for him to be a post-hype sleeper, but I'm definitely intrigued, and I think he may be a guy who, because it was weird how much hype there was when he arrived last year, and then he was pretty doggone good for a 21-year-old. I mean, I think that's the thing we kind of lose sight of, is that he wasn't bad. He was pretty decent for a 21-year-old in the big leagues. So, but it seemed like the hype cycle moved weirdly fast with him. Like, the hype totally boomed, and then he was only pretty good, and then the hype vanished. So I do feel like maybe there's a value opportunity with him. Do you think that exists, or do you think people who have him know what they have?
No, I think that does exist. You know, I don't expect him to be a high average hitter. Like, I mean, he's obviously hitting 394 right now. That's not going to last. I don't even expect him to be a 300 hitter. But I could see him being much better than the 266 hitter that he was last season. And as I've said on here before, I try not to punish players for things that happened to them in the majors at the time when all of their peers are in the minors. And that yeah. was him last season. So, I mean, people, yeah, you're right. People were so excited about him. Then in the second half, he was really blah last year. His overall numbers, you know, 20 homers, 266 average, you know, 64 RBIs, that doesn't look very special. But then when you factor in how young he was, just the fact that he was holding his own against major league starters all season really, I think, points to a bright future for him. And it's a hitter-friendly environment and a quality lineup. He's someone who, if I own right now, I'm not trading him away, you know, at a discount. Like, I'm going to want the value of a potential young breakout player, because that is what he looks like right now.
Yep. We stay in the category of young outfielders in the American League West. Mitch Haniger off to also a very nice start, 3 home runs in 10 games. Maybe it's real. The thing I look at a really extensive minor league record, and I look at a guy who hit for power exactly twice in his career. And one of those times was in the Cal League, and one of those times was not just in the PCL, but in Reno in the PCL. It makes me think that this is probably a bit of a mirage. Doesn't mean I wouldn't write it now if I had an opening. You know, I think there's you know, if you have a need and you've got a guy who's hitting the ball well and you can kind of figure spots with him, that's fine. But I am, you know, relative to Mazzara, for a variety of reasons, heavily including age and minor league pedigree, I am definitely less buying on Haniger. Do you want to take a flyer on him? Do you think there's something there? Short-term fix, how do you see him?
Yeah, I'm higher on Haniger than you are. I think I'm as excited about him as I am with Mazzara. Different points, though. I think that maybe Haniger being a little older, I was impressed with what he did in the minors last year, and I was optimistic when he was called up by the Diamondbacks, and then they never really gave him a chance to run with it. I mean, he did hit 5 home runs in 109 at-bats, so that's a full season, you know, kind of 25 home run hitter, but they never really gave him, I felt like, a consistent opportunity. Now that he has that in Seattle, and he's hitting second in their lineup, you know, all the time, I could see 25 home runs. I can see 10 steals. I don't think the batting average will be high, but if you supply 25 home runs, 10 steals, and hit second all season, you could be pretty valuable. So I think he's someone who should be owned in, a lot of leagues right now. I would say even a lot of 10-team leagues.
A reminder, everybody, he's the fantasy expert. You should listen to him.
But even fantasy experts get a lot of these things wrong. And you bring up some good points about the scout pedigree, kind of his pedigree through the minors. There's a reason some of these guys are late bloomers. Some turn out, and some, you know, are flashes in the pan. The lineup spot is something that's pushing me a lot with him.
Yeah.
I really like guys who hit second, especially in, like, a pretty solid American League lineup.
No, that's a really good point. I mean, you know, one of the things you're looking for, and one of the reasons that some of these guys kind of don't pan out is that they maybe get a brief opportunity, but then if they fade at all, the opportunity goes away, and it wasn't a real opportunity. If he's got a real opportunity, then that certainly should factor in. That also factors in with Mazzara, by the way. Obviously, he's going to play. We move from the young to the old, and Ryan Zimmerman off to a really nice start. I am intending to do kind of a little deep dive on him on some Statcast numbers. I have not been able to do that yet, but I'm intrigued. I picked him up again. He's one of those guys I picked up for a short-term fix. I actually think I may have picked him up to replace Matt Kemp, so we really are just extensively talking about my office league team mm-hmm. this week. But, you know, I don't think Ryan Zimmerman is going to be the guy that we saw, you know, 5-6 years ago when he was an MVP-level player. But I also don't think the guy that we saw last year is the real Ryan Zimmerman. Like, I don't think that he is – last year he was a guy who should not have been starting at a corner for a contender, just full stop. Like, there's just – that he was not good enough to be the first baseman on a contending team. I'm not expecting to see the guy who in 2009 at 33 homers hit .292 – but I also wouldn't be shocked to see maybe the 2013 Zimmerman, 275, 26 homers, 79 RBI, 84 runs. That wouldn't shock me. I could see that. I think that may be the high end still. I think I still might take the under a little on that. But I think that's the kind of player you're looking at. So I think he is a playable first baseman in a mixed league at this point. It seems like maybe you're not quite as optimistic as I am.
Yeah, I'm lower on him than you, although I'll admit that I was burned by him last year, so maybe these are just scars that haven't healed over. But I'm concerned he'll get injured again. I think that's
a big
part of my concern for sure with him. That one's pretty obvious. But and obviously the small sample size, like the batting average is ridiculous, the BABIP's ridiculous so far. Like it's all going to come down. I think with the last three, even with Mazzara, Haniger, and now Zimmerman, there are only so many bench spots, and if you're in a 10- or 12-team league, which most listeners are, you have to pick who you're going to speculate on early in the season. So Zimmerman's hot, Haniger's hot, you know, Mazzara's hot, but you can't roster them all. I think I would rather go with a Haniger type who, I don't know, I feel like we've been here. I don't know. I just don't think that Zimmerman's going to keep this up for long. But that's really at this point with the small sample size, just guessing and personal preference. I could see someone wanting to go with Zimmerman. Would you rather roster Zimmerman than Haniger right now?
I think I'm not sure I would, only because of the added dimension that Haniger could get you the steals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think there's, but I think it's also, to some extent, a question of, it's not really a risk reward, because I think in both guys are reasonably high risk and potentially high reward. But tough question. I think it might, part of it comes down to what you need. I mean, I needed a first baseman. I needed a corner infielder, so I had Zimmerman. And I think that's one of the things, is that first base can be weirdly shallow at times for a position where we think of there being a zillion guys who are going to hit .290 and 30 homers. That can get a little thin, it seems like, and he's a guy who might be able to step into that void.
Yeah, and I mean, it could come down to, as I was saying about speculating, you know, do you want to speculate on Zimmerman, or do you want to speculate on Lucas Duda, who's shown a little bit of power so far, or CJ Krohn, who's hitting for average so far? I mean, when you're looking for that first baseman. And on a short-term basis, I can't argue with going with someone like Zimmerman, who has a long track record of success and is hot right now.
We move from the exciting to the really distressing. Byron Buxton has 30 plate appearances and 17 strikeouts. In his major league career, he has 499 plate appearances and 179 strikeouts. And every year, those ratios have gotten worse. Less than a third of the time in his first big league season, a little over a third of the time in his second taste of the big leagues, and this year just lost. It's not a case where he's hitting them at people. He's not hitting .069 on bad luck. It's a deserved .069. Boy, unless we're talking about a really deep league, unless we're talking about a lot of bench spots, I can't advocate carrying him at this point.
No, I agree. I was asked about Buxton probably 50 times during Monday's chat session, and in a lot of leagues at that point, I thought after 1 week, I said, just bench him. In most leagues, because there is upside there, just bench him and give him one more week and see where we go. But now we're even just halfway into that second week. And, I would say 10, 12-team league, go ahead and drop him. I think it's interesting. I think fantasy owners can't let go of the fact that Buxton was once labeled the number one prospect. Yep. There's something to me about when you're labeled number one, that, and we've said it with Jurickson Profar, that sticks with you forever. If you get up to number three, people can't remember whether you were three or four or five. They just know you were a really good prospect. But once you're ever labeled one, I find fantasy owners will never give up on you. And I'm not saying we have to give up on Buxton, but with guys that we've been talking about who are on waivers, like Mitch Haniger in leagues, like, I don't know how you continue to own Buxton. The turnaround would have to be so extreme for him to start outperforming Haniger anytime soon. I don't think anyone else will pick him up in a lot of leagues if you drop him.
No, I think that's true. You wait and see if you start getting that. If you keep an eye on him, and if he starts heating up, then maybe you jump on that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's. But you know, I don't think it's just the number one thing. You look at the range of things that he did in the minor leagues, and it is extremely exciting. He hit 302 over his minor league career, 101 steals in 325 games, 39 homers, you know, average. Basically, you divide that over two full big league seasons, you're talking 130 runs, 20 homers, 90 RBI, 50 steals. It's baffling, and it's distressing, and it's just weird because this guy was not – I guess the point is this guy was not rated as a prospect based purely on tools. It certainly was partly on tools, but it was also on performance. He performed. He did it in the minor leagues, has done it consistently in the minor leagues. And in fact, you know, even last year – I mean, that's what's so baffling. Last year, he raked at AAA, and he, again, had that broad base of skills – power, speed, hitting for average. And the strike zone judgment has really faded. I think that may be the scariest thing, as you look at a guy who, you know, in A-ball had strikeout-to-walk ratios that at times were not far from 1-to-1, or, you know, 1.3, 1.4. And last year, even in AAA, it was 4-to-1. And that is really disconcerting because that's the issue with him. But I think it's worth remembering this guy is not just a tools prospect. He's a performance prospect as well, and that's why everybody loves him so much.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's frustrating, but I think there's just no reason, as you mentioned, with what happened with him last season too, like, there's no reason for us to reasonably think he's going to really turn it around in the short term.
We move to starting pitchers and another very highly regarded prospect, who is not off to a great start in 2017, and that's Tyler Glasnow. But it's only one start. We knew there were going to be rough times. If I was intrigued by him before, I still am. I'm not jumping off. And, in fact, to me at this point, if somebody is dumping him, if somebody did get scared off by one start, I am willing to take a flyer on him and at least have him as a bench option to watch for a week or two and see if he gets it together. To me, one bad start where he couldn't find the strike zone, when it's a guy we know sometimes didn't get to find the strike zone, is not enough to chase me away.
Yeah, I'm going to be a little more negative. I know the potential is there. As you mentioned, like, having him on your bench is really what you want to do. I mean, you can't, coming off his first start of the season, you can't really justify putting him in your lineup, I think, until he puts together a couple solid starts. Sometimes I find that in fantasy, starters are really defined by their worst starts and not their best starts.
Yep.
And Glasnow's worst start is just really, really bad. It's that two innings and six walks and that whole thing. And that's the kind of thing that can really ruin your ratios in a roto league or really kill your week in a head-to-head league. So until he can get past those, Matt Boyd's another totally different pitcher than Glasnow, but he's someone who I find can put together some good starts, but so far in his career, when he has bad starts, they're just really, really bad. And until pitchers can get away from those so that your bad start becomes five innings, you know, four runs, eight base runners, a bad start but not tremendously bad, I mean, then I can put a guy in my lineup. So I don't know what it would take to get him back in my lineup. I think in a 10-team league, I would let him go, maybe even in a 12-team. But in a 15-team league, I would want to hold him.
I think that's a fair point. And on the opposite end, a guy who has really outperformed expectations thus far, Kendall Graveman, is missing bats, which is the one thing we didn't expect him to do. I am suspicious. I'm willing to stream him, but I'm not fully on board. Do you like him more than I do?
No, not really. I like that you said you're willing to stream him, and so am I, and I'm willing to stream him based even on him being hot right now. So right now I'll use him until I see something to make me jump off. But I am ready to jump off fairly quickly because traditionally his strikeout rate is low. So if those strikeouts start going back down to just, you know, three strikeouts per start, now we really need him to have solid ratios to help. And obviously if the strikeouts go down, then probably the ratios start to go back up. So I'm not projecting, you know, stardom for him. He is someone the A's have always been really high on, I think, right back to when they traded for him from the Blue Jays. And I think the A's were higher on him than any other organization, including Toronto, when they traded for him. I think they really wanted him and saw something in him. So I'll give him the benefit of from that end. But I want to own him right now, but I'm not considering him like a six-month asset at this point.
I want to take a moment here, because it's a very exciting opportunity we don't always get, to tip our cap to our forefathers of the 411. And we're going to talk about a player that, from back in the old days of the 411, has been a favorite of one of our predecessors, the great Mike Ciano. We're talking about Big Irv, Irvin Santana. He has a 0.69 ERA this year, was very strong in the second half of last year, and I'm still a little leery. Again, to me, he's more... I guess he's a back-of-the-rotation guy. He's not somebody I'm out to get. He's convinced me that I should like him more than I do.
Well, I mean, he's just been pitching so well. I mean, going back to July 20th of last season, he has a 2.25 ERA and a 1.05 whip. Those are just really, really excellent. It's one of those things, they'll do those fantasy games sometimes where they say cover up the name, just look at the stats, and then talk about him. I agree with you. We're always waiting with Santana because he has been inconsistent in his career from like week to week, month to month. We're always waiting for the other shoe to drop and for the blow up to happen. But it hasn't happened in a while.
Yep.
His season-long stats tend to be okay. I think he's someone who has to be in every lineup now, and then we'll figure it out. If the other shoe drops, then you deal with it. But, for example, I would much prefer him over Graveman. I would much prefer the consistency of Santana over the potential of Glasnow.
Where would you rate him compared to somebody who I think kind of fits a similar profile, Marco Estrada?
Yeah, they're getting pretty close in my mind. I guess I still prefer Estrada a little bit, but... Because Estrada's always able to keep his whip down. And I know Santana has kept his whip down for the past several months, but not in his whole career. Estrada, with those fly balls, always keeps his whip down. So I think I prefer Estrada a little bit. But Estrada's not off to a great start this season. They're getting very, very close.
Excuse me. Dylan Bundy is off to a really intriguing start overall. Had one great start. He is one of those guys... You know, a little like Buxton, except that he is performing. One of those guys where the prospect sheen is so bright, even now. The tools are so good. There's this kind of excitement level. There's a term that Jeff Luhnow used to use a lot. I know it's not unique to him, but he's a guy I heard use it most when he was a Cardinals farm director. He said, this is a guy you can dream on. And Bundy is definitely a guy you can dream on. And so it's kind of wonder how much that colors how you talk about him, because the performance has been pretty inconsistent. He was pretty lousy down the stretch last year. So the question is, are you buying that maybe he's put something together, or would you rather be selling and hoping somebody else is buying that?
Yeah, if I had picked up Bundy as a speculation play, and then it's turned out so far, I think I would be looking to move him. I'm more down. I think I'm lower on him than most people. Given the whole sample size of the season so far, I'm not that impressed with his first start against the Blue Jays, because the Blue Jays, I think, have been the worst lineup in baseball so far this year. And I know they'll come around and be better than they have been and everything, but really, like, almost every pitcher who's faced Toronto so far has been quite successful. So that takes some of the shine off that one for me. And his start against Boston, which I know Boston's a tough lineup, but they have been not really at full strength this year. I mean, 3 strikeouts and 6 1/3, 9 base runners. Not really impressive. We know the AL East is tough. Like you said, if someone else in my league is really excited about getting Dylan Bundy, I would happily trade him for Irvin Santana, and I think other owners would be totally interested in that.
That makes sense. And one last starter before we move on, Lance McCullers. Is this the year?
We won't know until August because he has to stay healthy. That's the thing with players like Lance McCullers and Giancarlo Stanton, like... With health is such a big issue, but I mean, on a per start basis, this guy's arrived. Like, he's terrific. I think owners who I think there's a really neat market right now for McCullers. If you need to trade for a potential ace, if you don't want to pay what you have to pay for Scherzer or Baumgartner or you know, Syndergaard in the trade market, but you want someone who maybe, if everything breaks right, could possibly be that good, I think McCullers is your trade target. And because he will cost less than them, and if he stays healthy, you know, he can be really, really good. And, you know, if your pitching started off really poorly and you need to make a move, I think he's an interesting guy to make a move for.
17 strikeouts, one unintentional walk.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the skill, like, everything's there. To me, he's a totally different guy than Rich Hill, but kind of like Rich Hill, like,
yeah.
Where they're going to be great in almost all of their starts. It's just whether you're going to get 20 of them or 29 of them.
Yeah. All right. And we are about to talk closers. Before we do that, I want to take a minute to tell you about the MLB Pipeline podcast, which focuses on all things draft and prospect related. MLB Pipeline's draft and prospect gurus, and I do not use that term lightly, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, join Tim McMaster each week to talk about what's going on in the universe of MLB's future stars. Last week, Jim, Jonathan, and Tim broke down the most talented rosters in the minor leagues and discussed return dates for some injured top 100 prospects. Search for MLB Pipeline in iTunes or wherever else you get your podcast and click subscribe. It becomes harder and harder as we get the mass of major league games and we start looking at big leagues, and they're separate from the minor leagues. It becomes harder to follow the minors, I think, for some people, or maybe more accurately, easier to lose track of them. And those guys provide a great opportunity to sort of know what you need to know. It's a great way to take some time and learn what you need to know about the minors in a given week.
Yeah, you're right. You can't keep up with these players now if you're a regular fantasy owner just trying to keep up with what's happening in the majors. So just let them do the work for you. Listen to their podcast, you know, check their site. And because prospect values change often even faster than major league players' values change. So keeping up with how these young players are doing in the minors is really important if you're in a league where you want to speculate on who may be called up at some point.
And I know I say this every time we talk about them, but I'm going to keep drilling it because I like these guys and I'm proud of us for having them on board. They are the best. I mean, if you just talk to people who know prospects, Callis is as good as it gets. Mayo is as good as it gets. I don't think there's anybody, including people who focus on this stuff, who have a better pair of minor league experts than we have. Those guys are exceptional. Proud to have them on our team, and you should listen to what they have to say. Now we move to closers, and unsurprisingly, early in the year, there is closer news to talk about. The Phillies waited all of about 4 days to move on from Jean-Marc Gomez, and for now, it's Joaquin Benoit. I think Benoit stays. I like Neris. I like him a lot. I like Ramos as well. But I think this may be some sneaky sabermetric thinking here. And I could be wrong, and I'm not saying that Pete McCannon is an analytics guy. But that's a more and more a forward-thinking front office. And I wouldn't be surprised if there is a little bit of a thought that they'd rather have their best pitcher, which is Neris, able to come in the seventh and get through the eighth, able to be deployed for the heart of the lineup at some point before the ninth, and have Benoit, the guy with the capital C, proven closer, as the sort of push-button option in the ninth. So even though I think Neris is the better pitcher, and even though I think Benoit still has some blow-up risk, I think Benoit's pretty safe in the role. Are you still intrigued by any of the alternatives, or is Benoit the guy in your mind as well?
He's totally the guy. I was interested to see where you would go with this. I feel like, just judging from what I've seen out there from other fantasy analysts, that I'm higher on Benoit than everybody else. I find that most people are just looking at him as an older reliever and saying, oh, this is just a stopgap. He'll, you know, don't invest in him. His ratios, other than a really brief time in Seattle, his ratios for years, I mean going back to like 2010, have been terrific. Anytime he's been in the ninth inning, he's handled it fine, handled that pressure of the ninth inning fine. I agree with you that there could be some other factors at play, such as setting up the seventh and eighth innings where he's not really a multi-inning guy anymore. There could even be issues at play as far as like Benoit's potential trade value at the end of July.
Yep.
You know, if now, you know, there still is that, you know, he can pitch any inning for you, even
yep.
the ninth. I think there's so many things. I speculated on Benoit and Tout Wars and grabbed him on the Sunday night, you know, last Sunday night, when people were more thinking that it wouldn't be him to get the shot. I think now that he has it, barring injury, I think he holds it.
Yep. And one other thing before we move on, there's also potentially another financial reason, which is that when arbitration starts coming up, you don't have to pay guys who have pitched the eighth as much as you have to pay guys who have pitched the ninth. So I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying it wouldn't be the first time. If that is part of their reasoning, they wouldn't be the first team to do that.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, there's still time for them to use Neris, like in August and September.
If
they trade Benoit at the deadline. But as a fantasy owner, if you're investing in Benoit and you can get 3+ good months of closing out of him, then that's great. I mean, August's a long way away in the world of fantasy relievers.
Stay in the NL East. Blake Treinen not off to the best start, and the problem is that Sean Kelly is not off to the best start either. I kind of stand by my earlier theory, which is that they're going to give Treinen at least enough rope that by the time they make a move, I still think if they make a move, the move is to Glover and not to Kelly. I just think it's more and more clear Kelly is not the guy they want, and I think there's a distinct chance that Treinen was installed there in part because it'll be easier to take it from him and give to Glover than it would Kelly. I still think Treinen is the guy. I don't think he's on particularly thin ice, but if I do think he's on thin ice, I'm not investing in Kelly, in part because I just don't think they want to give him the job, and in part because he hadn't been any better than Treinen has so far.
Yeah, I agree. I think Glover's the one to keep an eye on. If he strings together, you know, 5 or 6 good outings in a row, and at the same time Treinen strings together, you know, only 2 or 3 good outings out of 5 or 6, then I think that they could make that switch. I agree with you on Kelly. I'm pretty much completely off him, other than leagues that count holds or an NL-only league. If they ever went to Kelly for saves this year, I think it would be a really short stopgap where they would be actively looking then at that point maybe to trade for someone or do something else and just using him because maybe that was all they had at that point in time. But, yeah, I'm not completely worried about trying him, but, I mean, he doesn't have any real closer experience and he hasn't been great so far.
Yeah. The Rangers, another team we've talked about a lot. The problem is that the alternative we talked about, Matt Busch, is also apparently dealing with a shoulder issue. So where do you go there?
Yeah, I out of all the relievers, I think I would still prefer to have Busch and just hope that the shoulder, I mean, they're talking about him being back, you know, hopefully by this weekend. If he's back this weekend, then I don't see why he couldn't, you know, become right at the front of that possible closer committee right now. Tony Barnett's another one who, you know, I didn't even put him into our script, but then the more I looked at it, he's pitching well and is healthy and no one else is. So Barnett could be someone who gets some saves even on a short-term basis for the Rangers just while they figure out what's happening with Busch and what they want to do with Dyson. And I don't know if they've totally walked away from Dyson, but I think he's off to the worst start, we could say, of any closer in baseball this year. I guess him or Gomez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Reds, in the face of my skepticism, have been pretty creative with their relievers in the early going in a variety of different ways. I still maintain some skepticism. I still think somebody ends up with 25 saves on that team. Is Iglesias the guy you would bet on to be the one who does that?
Yeah, and I mean, he's off to a great start. I mean, he already has 3 saves. That's as many as some closers who are working, you know, alone in that role. He hasn't given up a run yet. He's thrown 5 2/3 innings. I think he's someone who should be owned and active in pretty much every league. And I know your stance that, you know, committees generally don't sustain. I do think the A's may sustain their committee longer.
Yeah.
I could see the Reds going more because the A's, I don't think any of their options are going to be so dominant or so much better than the others. But I could see Iglesias getting, you know, maybe he doesn't get every save, but he gets a lot of them. And that could just smooth into by the middle of May getting every save.
And then speaking of creative bullpen use, Chris Davinsky getting some really interesting use and maybe moving him to the point where he becomes an intriguing fantasy option as a guy who knows, might pitch 120 innings with good ratios. What formats are you thinking about picking up Davinsky?
I think any 12-team league, I think he should be owned. I'm comparing him right now to Andrew Miller and Dellin Betances. I know they have the longer track record, and if someone wants to say they're the better pitchers, I totally understand that and agree with that. But Davinsky's, you know, he's thrown 116 in the third innings in the majors, 2.09 ERA, 0.89 WHIP. So elite ratios, and a really nice strikeout rate. Yeah, he's someone who could this season throw over 100 innings, strike out maybe even 120 batters, pick up a handful of wins, maybe even pick up a save or two by throwing three innings and have really nice ratios. In a 12-team league, especially leagues with daily transactions, those pitchers are really valuable.
And we finally move to the two start pitchers. Stephen Wright, home for Tampa Bay at Baltimore. Bartolo, home for San Diego and Washington. Joe Musgrove, home for the Angels and at the Rays. Brandon McCarthy, two starts against the Diamondbacks, one at home, one on the road. Andrew Triggs, home for Texas and Seattle. Ariel Miranda, home for Miami and at Oakland. Lance Lynn, home for Pittsburgh and at Milwaukee. Blake Snell, at Boston, home for Houston. Jesse Chavez, at Houston, home for Toronto. Boy, man, I love half of that Blake Snell, and I don't love the other half. I'm intrigued by Lynn, particularly because of the matchups. I'm intrigued by Musgrove. I like those matchups a lot, and I like the pitcher pretty well. Maybe Bartolo, but I'm still I'm a little nervous, and we don't know how the park's going to play. Who do you like from that list?
I think I like Triggs the most, actually. He's just off to a nice start. I think he's an intriguing pitcher, and he has two starts at that pitcher-friendly home park. So I like him. I would use Cologne and Musgrove in 12-team leagues, like in a lot of leagues. I would consider McCarthy. At least in a 15-team league, I would consider him. I'm with you on Lynn, and then the rest of them, I don't think I would. I wouldn't touch Snell. The at Fenway is just too scary for me.
Yep.
I don't really believe in Chavez or Miranda, and I don't think you could use Stephen Wright after what happened to him in his most recent start. I don't think you could use him in any league.
All right, that's the Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week.